So we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 5, verses 29 to 32. Today is also the appearance of Vamanadev and Jiva Goswami. And also today we're observing Ekadashi. We're also fasting for Vamandev and also appearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which is tomorrow. The first few verses, 29, 30, 31, do not have a purport. So I'll recite that myself and then we can recite 32 together. Okay. We'll try to discuss something on Vamandev and also Jiva Goswami, depending on how much time there is later on. So the chapter 5 of the Madhya Lila is entitled Activities of Sakshi Gopal. Text 29. The elderly Brahmana said, "My daughter is my own property. If I choose to give my property to someone, who has the power to stop me?" Text 30. "My dear boy, I will give my daughter to you in charity and I will neglect the position of all others. Don't doubt me in this regard. Just accept my proposal." Text 31. The younger Brahmana replied, "If you have decided to give your young daughter to me, then say so before the Gopal deity." So now, text 32, and this one has a purport, so we'll recite this together. So please repeat after me. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Abhay Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta, Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki. So translation first. Coming before Gopal, the elderly Brahman said, "My dear Lord, please witness that I have given my daughter to this boy." Purport. In India, it is still the custom for a daughter to be offered to someone simply by word. This is called Vag Datta. This means that the father, brother, or guardian of a girl has given his word that she will be married to a certain man. Consequently, that daughter cannot be married to anyone else. She is reserved by virtue of the honest words of the father or guardian. There are many instances in which the parents of a female child have given someone a verbal promise that their daughter will be married to his son. Both parties agree to wait until the boy and girl are grown up and then the marriage takes place. Following this custom, which is very old in India, the elderly Brahman promised to give his daughter to the younger Brahman in charity. And he promised this before the Gopal deity. In India, the custom is to honor and promise made before the deity. Honor any promise made before the deity. Such a promise cannot be cancelled. In Indian villages, whenever there is a quarrel between two parties, they go to the temple to settle the quarrel. Whatever is spoken in front of the deity is taken to be true, for no one would dare to lie before the deity. This same principle was followed in the battle of Kurukshetra. Therefore, in the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, it is said, "Dharma Kshetre, Kurukshetre." By not becoming God-conscious, human society is deteriorating to the lowest standard of animal life. This Krishna consciousness movement is very essential to reviving God consciousness amongst the general populace. If people actually become God conscious, all quarrels can be settled outside of court, as happened in the case of the two brahmanas, whose disagreement was settled by the witness Gopal. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Nama Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paschatya Desatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayeva Cha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishna Bhyo Namo Nama Anantakoti Vaishna Vrindaki. Once Srila Prabhupada's quarters were ready in ISKCON Juhu, Mr. Shetty was called. And Mr. Shetty with Srila Prabhupada, Giriraj Maharaj and others, they were going around and checking out the building, checking out the temple, and also specifically Srila Prabhupada's quarters. And Srila Prabhupada was very impressed by what Mr. Shetty had done, how he built the temple and how he made all the decorations, refurbished his quarters specifically. So Srila Prabhupada said to Mr. Shetty, this room, these quarters should be for you. You can take these quarters. You always found living in the temple and temple life austere. Now, these comfortable quarters, these beautiful quarters, you can take. I don't want these quarters. Right? You can stay in the temple, engage in devotional service, and live in these quarters. So Mr. Shetty said, no, Srila Prabhupada, this is for you. This is for you. We made this for you. This is for your pleasure. Right? This is for the pleasure of the spiritual master who is serving the Lord so nicely. So then Srila Prabhupada later on, he said to Mr. Shetty, you have built a temple for the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord has a place, has a home reserved for you in the spiritual world. So in these two chapters, chapter 4 and chapter 5, we're hearing about how the Supreme Lord reciprocates with his devotees. Specifically in chapter 4, we are hearing about Shir Chor Gopinath. Yes? And how specifically he reciprocated with Madhavendra Puri, who was a spiritual master, who was an advanced devotee, a renunciate, leader amongst the Vaishnavas. So how did he reciprocate with Madhavendra Puri? He appeared in front of him and offered him milk. First he appeared directly in front of Madhavendra Puri. Then he appeared to him in several dreams and he instructed him in various ways. And then, at the end of chapter 4, we hear about how Gopinath stole, reserved sweet rice for Madhavendra Puri. So, we were hearing in chapter 4 how the Supreme Lord reciprocates with advanced devotees, great devotees, pure devotees, spiritual master. In this chapter, we're hearing how the Supreme, we're going to hear specific details on how the Supreme Lord reciprocates with ordinary devotees. Supreme Lord reciprocates with everyone. He reciprocates very much with the advanced devotees and in a direct way. And also, the Supreme Lord reciprocates with ordinary devotees, and he also reciprocates with ordinary persons as well. Here we're hearing about how the Supreme Lord reciprocates with ordinary devotees. So two brahmanas were on a pilgrimage. The younger brahmana, seeing the elder brahmana needed help, he was struggling as he was traversing and participating in this pilgrimage. Younger brahmana was helping, was assisting the older brahmana in various ways. He pleased the elder brahmana by serving him, by fulfilling his needs, by assisting him in various ways. So the older brahmana, being served by the younger brahmana, was very, very pleased. So he said to the younger brahmana, because I'm so pleased with your service, and because I see that you have amazing qualities, you're well qualified, I want to give my daughter to you for marriage. The younger brahmana was surprised. You know, people offer sweet words in response when we do some service for them, generally. Sometimes they don't. But, you know, we're happy with the sweet words, right? Sometimes when the devotee reciprocates with sweet words. Sometimes devotees may give us Mangalati sweet, right? May do something little for us in reciprocation for some service that we've done. So here, the younger brahmana was very surprised, was astonished that here the elder brahmana is offering his daughter in hand for marriage. So the younger brahmana was doubtful. So he questioned the elder brahmana. Are you sure about this? And then what about your daughter? Will she be okay? Will she be happy accepting me as a husband? And what about the friends and relatives? What about your friends and relatives? So here we have the elder brahmana responding. So text 29 that we read. So here the elder brahmana is reassuring the younger brahmana. But don't worry about my relatives, don't worry about my friends, and I'm not joking with you. You can actually have my daughter for marriage. So the elder brahmana says, my daughter is my own property. If I choose to give my property to someone, who has the power to stop me? All right. So this is interesting. When he's speaking like this, it sounds like he's kind of like a dictator. He's like the controller of his family members, his controller of his daughter and so on. But he's speaking to reassure the younger brahmana. He's appreciated the service that the younger brahmana has done. He very much loves his daughter, in fact. He very much loves his daughter. And therefore, out of love for his daughter, he's speaking and reassuring this younger brahmana. Because he's very qualified, because he has served him very well, that I'm going to give you my daughter for charity. And no one can stop me. No one can stop me. Usually the fathers very much love their daughters more than their son. And it's the other way around. For the mothers. Mothers love their son very much. I don't know how psychologically and how that works technically. But this is how it is. Fathers and daughters have quite an intimate relationship. Their relationship is quite deep. Is very more affectionate, right, compared to father and son. And similarly, mothers and sons' relationship is deeper, right, compared to mothers and daughters like that. Similar cases there also with my mother and my sister, you know, like that. Usually my mother and sister always disagreeing on things and having difference of opinions. Arguing against each other. And sometimes I have to step in and then I have to speak to my mother. And because my mother loves me, she kind of accepts. Okay, fine. Because you're saying it, okay, fine, but I still disagree and so on and so forth. So here, the father, out of love for the daughter, knowing very well the qualities of the younger brahmana, he's saying, you can have my daughter and you don't have to worry about any of the family members. My daughter is my own property. One time, one devotee arranged a room for Srila Prabhupada. It was it must have been San Francisco, and the room wasn't of good standards. There weren't furniture there, it didn't seem so clean, and so on and so forth. So Prabhupada had already come to the house, to that particular place. And devotees were thinking, how should we approach Srila Prabhupada? What should we do? It's not appropriate for a spiritual master. And then all of a sudden, Govinda Dasi just came in and said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, we're not staying here. We should pack our bags. Okay, everyone, let's get out. We're not staying here. We'll find another place for you. So she didn't approach Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada, should we arrange something else? We're sorry, of this arrangement is not high standard. She just came in. And she said, okay, we're packing our bags. Prabhupada, we're going. We're going to another place. So how is it that Govindashi is speaking like this? She had so much love for Srila Prabhupada. She's speaking out of love. The Prabhupada can't stay in this place. And, what have you arranged for Srila Prabhupada? How dare you bring Srila Prabhupada here? So, Prabhupada, we're going. And you'll stay somewhere else. Like this. So here, the elderly brahmana is saying, the daughter is my property. This daughter is my property. I love my daughter. And I've seen your qualities. And you have served me well. Therefore, I give my daughter to you, and no one can stop me. The brahmana continues, the elderly brahmana, my dear boy, I will give my daughter to you in charity, and I will neglect the position of all others. I don't care about my wife, I don't care about my sons, right? I love my daughter so much, and I want to give my daughter to you. Don't doubt me. Because the younger brahmana was astonished, right, that elderly brahmana is reciprocating in this way. Don't doubt me in this regard. Just accept this proposal. So younger brahmana is still not quite sure. Is he serious? Is he joking with me? Sometimes people say things, at that particular moment, spare of time, like that, they say something because they're excited. So is this elderly brahmana, is he actually serious? So then, again, the younger brahmana, puts it out to him. And he says, if you have decided to give your younger daughter to me, then you say so before the Gopal deity. Right, so go in front of the Gopal deity. We should both go in front of the Gopal deity, and you should make a promise. And Gopal deity can become our witness. So you say so in front of Gopal deity, and in this way, matter will be resolved, matter will be solved, like this. Then I will accept your words. Because this is far out. What you're offering me is far out. Yeah? Then I should accept your words. So, therefore then the older brahmana goes in front of the Gopal deity and he says, my dear Lord, please witness that I have given my daughter to this boy. So Srila Prabhupada in the purport says, no one dares to go in front of the deity and lie. In the Shisha Upanishad, Srila Prabhupada also speaks about when the Vedic scriptures are mentioned, when something is mentioned, when any of the verses are mentioned from the Vedic scriptures, when someone says something, that this is what the Vedic scriptures say, then one has to accept. Even though there may be disagreements, we may have different opinions, but if someone then steps in and quotes the Vedic scriptures, quotes a particular verse, and if they say that this is what it says, this is what the Shastra says, then we have to accept. So here, no one can lie in front of the deity. No one should lie in front of the deity. Right? No one dares to lie in front of the deity. And then Srila Prabhupada continues on in the purport, and he says that when one lives a God-conscious life, when one lives a life according to the scriptures, right, then there are no quarrels, there are no disagreements. And if there are disagreements, right, then they go in front of the deity and resolve the matter. Right? Or they delve into the scriptures, right? They refer to the scriptures, they bring out a verse and solve the matter in this way. Like this. So here the elderly Brahmana, upon the request of the younger Brahmana, makes his promise in front of the deity, Gopal deity. Also, Bali Maharaj made a promise in front of the Lord. He made a promise to the Lord directly, right? To Vamanadev. Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda ki. Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Shishi Gaur Nitai ki. Bali Maharaj also made a promise directly in front of the Lord. Made a promise to the Lord. Right? What was the promise? Bali Maharaj, being very pleased with Mamanadev, he was overwhelmed by his beauty, by his effulgence. It is described that when Vamanadev entered the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj, his effulgence was so great that it diminished the effulgence and the beauty and the greatness of all the sages, all the great personalities that were sat there on the sacrifice, that were getting ready and preparing for sacrifice for Bali Maharaj. So when Bali Maharaj saw Vamanadev like this, being overwhelmed by his beauty, his effulgence, he immediately came forward to worship Vamanadev. He offered various paraphernalia to Vamanadev, he washed his lotus feet, and just like Lord Shiva takes the water of Ganges and holds it on his head, similarly Vamanadev took the water of the feet of Bali Maharaj that he had just washed and put it on his head. And then he said to Bali Maharaj that I am so impressed by you. I'm overwhelmed by your beauty. I'm overwhelmed by your effulgence. You can ask for me whatever charity you like. Would you like some gold? Would you like some jewel? You can ask from me whatever you desire. So then at that time, before Vamanadev puts his request forward, Sukracharya is there, and he knows that this is Lord Vishnu. So Sukracharya is wondering what should happen now. And as he's thinking like this, he's thinking somehow to intervene. So then Bali Maharaj almost blurts out, "Please ask, please ask." And Vamanadev says that, "I don't require any gold, I don't want any jewelry, I just want small piece of land from you. I just want a little bit of space so I can engage in my austerities, space for me to sleep, place for me to carry out my vows of brahmacharya," like this. So then Bali Maharaj said, "Okay, let it be. Let it be. So in that time, Sukracharya said, Bali Maharaj, what have you done? This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is one thing you can do. You don't have to fulfill your vows. You don't have to fulfill your promise. You can retract your promise. So Sukracharya explains to Bali Maharaj that according to the scriptures, if you're in danger, then you can actually retract your promise. You can go against your promise. He also explained to Bali Maharaj, Sukracharya, that also if there is an enemy, if there's an enemy and also you're thinking of your people, your side, you're thinking of others, for the benefit of others, you can also retract your promise like this. So then, in this way, please tell Vamandev that, retract your promise and take this land away from him. So then, at that time, Bali Maharaj became contemplative. You know, what should I do? I made a promise. And at the same time, Sukracharya is saying, my spiritual master is saying that Vamandev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here he's come to take away all the property of the demigods. He's going to take everything away from you. So therefore, retract everything according to scriptural injunctions. One can retract one's promise, especially if one is in danger, especially if one is thinking of others, especially if one is thinking of one's side, people on his side and so on. Right? You're the leader of the demons. This is what the spiritual master is saying, and you should take your responsibilities to look after the property of the demons. So what should I do? So Bali Maharaj was very contemplative. He was thinking to himself, I can't retract this promise. How can I lie to a brahmachari? Right? How can I lie to a brahmachari? And I'm a grahastha, so grahasthas are meant to give charity to the brahmacharis. So therefore, I must give what I promised to Vamanadev. So he started thinking like this, and then he started also thinking that even if Vamanadev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this young boy is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and if he takes everything away from me, everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. And somehow also Bali Maharaj felt that he didn't have any envy. He wasn't thinking, oh, everything will be taken away from him, what's going to happen to me. So also there was no envy within his heart towards Vamandev, because he had appeared in such a beautiful form, a young brahmachari, right? Dressed in deer skin, with a belt of munja straw around him. And he was carrying a water pot, he was carrying a danda in his hand, and there was an umbrella over him. He was holding an umbrella also in his hands. So, being mesmerized by the beauty of Vamanadev, he was overcome by affection towards Vamanadev. So then he said, regardless of what my spiritual master says, I'm not going to go by what my spiritual master says. Vamanadev, you can have. You please take the land that you requested from me. Because everything at that time belonged to Bali Maharaj. All the properties of the demigods, all the lands belong to Bali Maharaj. So you take however much land you require. So at that time, Vamanadev expanded himself. And he's described he became big as this earthly planet. He took on the form of Lord Vishnu, and he's carrying a conch shell, chakra, gada, mace, and a lotus flower. And he was dressed in yellow. He was in bluish complexion, and he was growing. He became so gigantic. It's described that his hands covered all the directions. And his first step covered the sky. Then Vamandev took his second step. And when he took his second step, it's described that he reached, his foot reached the upper planetary systems, Brahmaloka. So when his foot reached the upper planetary system, at that time Lord Brahma took the opportunity to worship the feet of Vamanadeva. So he washed, just like Bali Maharaj had done earlier, Lord Brahma also took the opportunity to wash the feet of Vamanadeva. And he worshipped Vamanadeva. He put the water of the feet of Vamanadeva on his head. And then, at that time, the assistants of Bali Maharaj, the soldiers of Bali Maharaj started attacking Vamanadeva. Although Bali Maharaj was trying to stop him, but then by the associates of Vamanadeva, the devotees, fought with the soldiers of Bali Maharaj. And then Bali Maharaj sent the soldiers to the lower planetary systems. And at that time, Garuda was there as well. And knowing the heart of Vamanadeva, knowing the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he tied up Bali Maharaj with the ropes of Varuna. And then Vamanadeva, in this gigantic form, spoke to Bali Maharaj and he said, "Where shall I put my third step? I requested from you three steps of land. Where shall I put my third step?" So at that time, Bali Maharaj was thinking, how can I fulfill my vow? And he felt very bad within himself. That I promised this vow to the Supreme Lord, to this Brahmachari. I meant to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what should I do? And at that time, he started thinking of great personalities in history, how they had given themselves completely to the Supreme Lord. He also thought of his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj. Right? And in this way, he came to the conclusion, and he said to Vamanadeva that you can place your third step, you can place your feet on my head. So it is described at that point, from surrendering everything to the Supreme Lord, he came to the point of surrendering his very self to the Supreme Lord. So there is a difference between surrendering everything to the Lord and becoming a surrendered soul. Yeah. So the Sanskrit term which is mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Atma Nivedanam, when one surrenders everything to the Supreme Lord. Atma Nivedanam. Bali Abhut Krishnapti Eshampara. So how did Bali Maharaj attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead? By surrendering everything to the Supreme Lord. And then he surrendered himself to the Supreme Lord. Right? He surrendered himself to the Supreme Lord. He became a surrendered soul. And the Sanskrit term for that is Sarva Sampati or Sarnagati. Sarnagati is another term. Sarva Sampati or Sarnagati. Like that. So in this way, Bali Maharaj became completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord. He gave himself to the Supreme Lord. So in this way, then Bali Maharaj was very pleased that he has served the Lord, he has become a surrendered soul. And then Vamanadeva reciprocated with Bali Maharaj. And especially after prayers made by Prahlad Maharaj, all the saintly personalities, and Bali Maharaj's wife Vidyadali. Right? That in the purport, Prabhupada says that Bali Maharaj's wife said that Bali Maharaj was thinking that, you know, I'm such a great personality, I'm giving everything to the Supreme Lord, like this. But actually one should become a surrendered soul. Right? One should become a surrendered soul. Not just give to the Supreme Lord, give everything to the Supreme Lord, but one should give oneself to the Supreme Lord. So in this way, various prayers were made, the Supreme Lord was glorified, and Vamandev being pleased with the various prayers of the devotees and being pleased with Bali Maharaj, he said to Bali Maharaj that, "I will give you my own chakra for your protection, and I will always be there with you." And he also gave him the place Sutala for his residence and his associates' residence as well. So he's described this place Sutala, although it's in the lower regions, it is as opulent as the heavenly planets, that of Indra and the demigods, like this. So Vamandev became pleased, Bali Maharaj sacrificed everything and himself for the sake of the Supreme Lord. I was just thinking at this point that we may be struggling to sacrifice something for the Supreme Lord, or to speak about everything, like Bali Maharaj. And then on top of that, then Bali Maharaj gives himself absolutely. He tells the Supreme Lord that you can place your feet on my head. I have nothing else to give you, but I give myself to you. So maybe just devotees can maybe throw out a few points in terms of how we can come to sacrifice some things for the Lord, sacrifice everything for the Lord, and ultimately sacrifice our very self, give ourselves completely to the Supreme Lord. So I don't know if devotees have any thoughts on that. What will help us to do that? We're trying to at the moment, but what would be those things that will help us? Taruna Prabhu?
To surrender everything is fairly easy, although it sounds almost impossible for somebody. Even this is fairly easy. But to surrender my false ego, my independence to Guru and Krishna is very difficult. And that's actually thing which we hold on to the last point. If we really meditate, each one of us inside ourselves, at this point, to surrender yourself, your independence, your ego, to somebody, even Guru, or to speak of Krishna, is next to impossible. So now I'm turning this again to you, to you to give us some tips or somebody else. It's very difficult.
Many people find, to sacrifice anything, to give anything to anyone, to the Supreme Lord, very difficult. There are some people who are ready to sacrifice something to give something. Right? That's the general, devotee community. They're trying to give something. They're trying to give something of their earnings. Right? They're trying to give some of our time, use some of our energy in the service of the Lord. So that's difficult enough. That's a challenge. Sometimes also the question comes, we have to get the balance right. Yes? So we're able to maintain our Krishna consciousness and we don't give up our Krishna consciousness like this. And then what to speak of then? Giving up everything. And on top of that, then we have to give ourselves like that. Give up our false ego, who we are, what we are, like this. So, how do we do that? How do we begin? What will help us to do that? Yeah, Sutta Prabhu?
Just wanted to make two comments. I think the first thing is that, of course, we know it's progressive. Mm-hmm. It's step by step. And I think that's a really, really important thing in any aspect of spiritual life, just to realize that it's a journey. Because when you focus too much on perfection, then it becomes unattainable and it becomes too lofty and too unrealistic. So I think, you know, even at our stage, to talk about surrendering everything is just like, that might not even be so much of a relevant question. Mm-hmm. What might be the question for us is, what's the next thing you can give up to take the next step? So that's just one point. And the other thing I think is really important, Tarun Prabhu was talking about independence and giving up independence. I think that's one reason why devotees, we all have to be very, very thoughtful, because when we look back in our life and see how much we were defeated by the material energy, how much we were foiled when we tried to be independent, how many great decisions we thought we made independently that backfired and, you know, flew back in our face. And when we constantly remember that, then we realize that, you know what, my independent acting in this world doesn't really work out. And then we get the confidence to be guided and to go with a higher plan. So I think this Prabhupada mentions this in the 7th verse of the 2nd chapter, where Arjun comes and says, Shishyasteham sadimam tam prapannam. He gives up his independence. And Prabhupada writes that when one realizes that the material world is a source of complexity and one cannot independently make a solution. So, but that requires one to be very thoughtful. Generally, when we get defeated by the material energy, we want to forget about it as soon as possible, because it's very humbling. But actually, we should remember how much we're being defeated and how much all of our independence amounts to nothing.
Okay, good. So, maybe the best for us is to take gradual steps. And really, rather than speaking about surrendering everything or surrendering ourselves absolutely, we should be thinking about what is the next thing I need to do in terms of my surrender. And we see this in Bali Maharaj. He is a very great personality, advanced personality. Also, it seemed like it was gradual for him, right? First, okay, what would you like? 3 steps? Okay, fine. And then Vamandev kind of expands himself, and then he takes off everything. So then Bali Maharaj, okay, you want everything? Fine. Like this. So he's not kind of going against Vamandev. And then Bali Maharaj says, okay, you can put the step on my head. Like that. So even in Bali Maharaj's case, it seems like it's gradual. You know, like that. And also, Sudha Prabhu, you mentioned once we're humbled by material nature, we're foiled by material nature, material energy, maya, then rather than kind of feeling all depressed and so on, we should depend on Krishna. We should take shelter of the spiritual master. We should take shelter of the Lord to be guided in terms of taking these steps, you know, like that. In terms of taking the next step for surrender. Yeah. And there was Ian Prabhu's hand. And then we'll go to Gokrishna. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. No, just based on, you know, how to gradually get onto that level of surrender, I think, and probably this was my experience, it might be different for others, but, you know, the things that for you to surrender, you have some sense of fear. Because, you know, you don't know how it is to be without these things or without, you know, this part of yourself that you've always been holding on to, until you find, like, access to such knowledge or, you know, realize that that's a perfection. Because we're seeking some form of perfection in one way or another, even before coming to spiritual life. Perfection is still in the back of our minds. But I saw for me something, you know, that could possibly work if I take advantage of it more, is associating with people who probably have, like, that gradual level of surrender, because you kind of see that, oh, you know, they're doing it and, you know, it's not so bad. And that can be like a motivating impetus to kind of get you to want to be on that similar platform, rather than still retaining to the things that, you know, kind of, you know, as Stavrop was mentioning, beat you around, you know, when you were trying to be independent and controlling. Yeah.
So associate with the right people, specifically associated people who are taking steps to surrender, who are surrendering. Yeah. Go Krishna Prabhu.
Yes, I agree with all these points. One way we can think of it is that actually we have nothing to surrender. Actually, this body this life actually is doesn't belong to me. The elements of the body are provided by the Supreme Lord, they're guided by Him in the form of the Super Soul. Any possessions we have, actually, they don't really belong to us. They're just temporary, they're fleeting. We'll lose them anyway at some point. So having this understanding makes it easier, I think, to surrender. Because really, as Taruna said, we're actually just surrendering our false ego, our wrong understanding of who we are. So when we do really understand who we really are, we know that actually we have nothing but Krishna and His service. So therefore, actually, it's just natural to surrender. It's actually not difficult, really, once we let go of the false ego. It's actually the most natural thing. Mm. Anyway, that's just one perspective.
So, ultimately, everything is from the Lord. We are also part and parcel of the Lord. Everything is coming from the Lord. So, you know, where is the question of giving things up? Right? There is the question of, this belongs to me, and now I'm giving it to the Lord. And even our false ego is actually a misconception, you know, thinking me, my body, my life, you know, like that. So good, thank you. So, yes, Rasraj.
Thank you, Prabhu. One thing it's nice to know the benefits of surrendering before we surrender. Also, when people think of surrendering, they get scared. Why own everything? Why should I surrender? You know, surrendering is very difficult unless we know the benefits for it. And I think one of the main benefits is it's easy. It's really easy to surrender, and it's hard to struggle. Mm-hmm. When we surrender to government, when we surrender to rules that are given to us, that's very easy, and we get elevated even in material society. When we struggle against that, you know, then we're going to go to prison or we're going to get punishment and things like that. So I think the biggest benefit of surrendering is really easy, and it's difficult to protest.
Yeah.
It's actually very difficult to protest. It makes us unhappy.
Good. So yes, surrender. What will help us to surrender is if we know the benefits, if we list the benefits, and we actually begin to surrender rather than protest like that. So when we want to surrender, then things become easy. Like that. Good. Antarangabu? And then maybe we'll take one or two more after Antarangabu.
Hare Krishna. So all of these aspects which have been mentioned, there are, in my opinion, they're all based on faith. You can surrender, and all of what devotee's been mentioning is based from the Shastra, from the scriptures. But you can read them day in and day out, every single day, every night. But if you don't have the faith that they will actually bring fruits, then you cannot surrender. So surrender is very much, in my opinion, equivalent to having faith. Let's say your spiritual master gives you instruction, surrender, but if you don't have faith in his instructions, then they will bear no fruits. So all of this needs to be accompanied by having strong faith.
So surrender takes place when there is faith. And how does one develop faith? When there are fruits, when there are results, right? And how does one get the results? When one follows the instructions of the spiritual master. Okay, good. Sankirtan Priya Prabhu. Cyrus Prabhu, and then we can take Sankirtan Priya Prabhu after.
Rasaraj mentioned that difficult someone to surrender. I've got so much. How do I start to surrender? All of that, and I think to that I could just make one point: is that actually we have forgotten something, death. And at that point, everything is stripped away. So we can choose to surrender now or surrender later, but we will surrender. Yeah. Everything is taken away.
Yeah.
So I think we've just forgotten, yeah. actually.
Either voluntarily surrender mm-hmm. or you'll be forced to surrender, yeah. right? By in the form of in the form of death. So we'll take final thoughts from Sankirtan Priya Prabhu, and then we'll try to conclude.
Thank you very much, Paramakrama Prabhu, for a very nice class. Just got to one quick announcement that obviously we are fasting this day until midday. So we've forgotten that announcement earlier on. I've got two comments to actually make.
Thank you for reminding us. Thank you.
Two comments to make. First, I'm quite building on Guru Krishna Prabhu's comments that we actually don't own anything. We are here quite helpless, really. But one thing we do have very deep core within our hearts is that love that we need to surrender to Krishna, which is what he's actually after, is our love for him. And so, just like this Brahmana, the older Brahmana, he actually loved the younger Brahmana because he was offering his most prized possession to the younger Brahmana, his daughter that he really loved. And so he must have had that love also for the younger Brahmana. So he was offering his prized possession. Similarly, we have love deep buried in the core of our hearts that what we could surrender to Krishna. And that is what he is really looking for. Just a thought.
So it's easier to surrender, or we can surrender when we develop love, right? When we develop love for the Supreme Lord. Okay. Ladies, have any thoughts? So suppose developing love for Krishna, developing love for the Supreme Lord means hearing about the Supreme Lord, serving the Supreme Lord, specifically hearing about his pastimes and so on. In that way, one can develop affection, love, you know, like that. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much for a wonderful class. I just wanted to say that, yeah, this is really wonderful ideal, just to sacrifice everything to the Lord, also to sacrifice something. It's really wonderful, but I was just thinking, is it even possible for us, for not for everyone, of course, but I'm saying about myself, as a conditioned soul, am I able to really surrender unto the Lord, or this is mercy from him, just like Lord Vamanadev's pastime? This is big lesson, because Bali Maharaj, he just sacrificed 3 steps of land, isn't it? And he just took everything, Lord Vamanadev. So that means that this is all the mercy of the Lord. We cannot even surrender properly unto him, and this is all about his mercy. I just wanted to say this. Thank you. That's
a good point. We've been speaking about, okay, what steps are we going to take to surrender? How should we surrender? What should we think? Right? But can we surrender? It's a very good point. Can we surrender to us being conditioned souls? So maybe mercy is required. Right? What's required is mercy, and without the mercy we cannot surrender. So of course Bali Maharaj was given the mercy directly by the Supreme Lord, because Supreme Lord appeared, you know, at his sacrifice, right? At his sacrifice of place. Also, he was the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, and the Lord had promised him that all his descendants would be delivered like this. So Bali Maharaj received this special mercy by the Supreme Lord. So then the question comes, how do we attract that mercy? And how do we attract that mercy? So, I was thinking about Jiva Goswami. Today is his appearance. How did he attract the mercy of the Supreme Lord? How did he attract the mercy of his spiritual master, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami? Like that. So it is said that at a young age, his father passed away when he was just a child. Jiva Goswami was born in the early 15th century, and he lived similar time as Srila Prabhupada, something like 80 plus years, 86 years, something like that. His father died at a young age, and then when he grew up, approximately when he was 20 or so, also his mother died. And then he went to Naudwip to take instructions and guidance from Lord Nityananda Prabhu. So he worshipped Lord Nityananda Prabhu, he served Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and Nityananda Prabhu told him that you take shelter of Sanatan Goswami and you take shelter of Rupa Goswami, your uncles. But before you go there, I want you to go to Banaras. And there I want you to learn Vedanta. I want you to learn grammar, I want you to learn logic. So he did that for many years, taking the order of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. And then he came to Vrindavan, to Sanatan Goswami, to Rupa Goswami, and specifically he approached Sanatan Goswami for initiation. He requested Sanatan Goswami if he could be his spiritual master, and then Sanatan Goswami said, actually Rupa Goswami is more advanced than me, you know, like that. Out of humility, he directed Sanatan Goswami to Rupa Goswami, although Rupa Goswami accepted Sanatan Goswami as his spiritual master and elder brother. This is mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Right? He says, Rupa Goswami says, before he begins Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he offers his respect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He offers his respect to the devotees, and he offers his respect to his spiritual master. And he says, I offer my respect to my spiritual master, Sanatan Goswami, who is also my elder brother. So here Jiva Goswami approaches Sanatan Goswami, but Sanatan Goswami says, actually Rupa Goswami you should take initiation from. You should serve Rupa Goswami. He will also be reluctant to give you initiation, but you should serve him. Serve him humbly, serve him sincerely, and please him, and then maybe he will give initiation to you. So in this way, Jiva Goswami, following the instructions of Sanatan Goswami, served Rupa Goswami. It's described, Jiva Goswami massaged Rupa Goswami's feet, he would beg alms for Rupa Goswami, cook for him, wash all the utensils, worship his deities. So in this way, he served him in various ways and he pleased Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami, seeing the sincerity of Jiva Goswami, then accepted Jiva Goswami as his disciple. And then Rupa Goswami was dedicated completely, absolutely to his spiritual master, to Rupa Goswami. He didn't want to please him displease him in any way. So, you know, he would be very, very careful in terms of how others dealt with him, in terms of his spiritual master's honor, you know, in terms of his needs. So he attended to everything, and he's very sensitive to his spiritual master's requirements, and served him very nicely. One time, Rupa Narayan wanted to establish himself as a Digvijay Pandit, the scholar amongst all scholars, right? The most learned in the whole world, right? So he was going around different parts of India, he was going around different regions. He started off from South India and so on. And then he had heard that Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami are the foremost of scholars. So he came to Vrindavan and he approached Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami for debate. So Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami said, we're not interested in debates, you know, like that. And what you heard in terms of us being scholars, you know, sometimes you have disciples and you have other people, sometimes they over-glorify you. So don't take them seriously. We're not scholars. You know, we don't know much. So then Rupa Narayan said, okay, so if that's the case, then sign this Vijay Patra. So on there, on the Vijay Patra, it is said that I have been defeated by Rupa Narayan, so-and-so personality. You know, like that. So please sign this if you don't want to go for a debate. Right? And if you're not so much of scholars as people say. So then the Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, you know, sign the, you know, the document. And then Jiva Goswami found out. And, you know, Rupa Narayan was boasting, now I am the Digvijay, the best scholar in the whole of creation, and so on and so forth. So, you know, and he showed Jiva Goswami that look, because Jiva Goswami was wondering, you defeated Rupa Goswami and you defeated Sanatana Goswami as well? He said, yes, look, here's their signature. And immediately Jiva Goswami recognized Rupa Goswami's beautiful writing. And he thought, out of humility, my spiritual master must have signed this. So then, to protect the honor of his spiritual master, he had a debate. He said, okay, you know, it's not possible that actually you defeated these personalities and that you're a great scholar as Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. You must debate me first. You know, like that. So then they had this debate for 7 days. And on the seventh day, Jiva Goswami annihilated, destroyed Rupa Narayan. And it is described that Rupa Narayan almost ran out of Vrindavan, never to be seen again, like this. And then Jiva Goswami presented all of these things to Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. And then instead of Rupa Goswami becoming pleased, he chastised Jiva Goswami. He said, why you wasted your time, your precious time? Instead of engaging in devotional service, you wasted it with this scholar and in debating with this scholar. Right? You are just after some honor, some prestige to be recognized as a scholar. So persons who are interested in, you know, to be honored, you know, want some position to be recognized as a scholar, they're not fit to live in Vrindavan. Right? So you should leave Vrindavan. So Jiva Goswami felt I've displeased my spiritual master, I've offended my spiritual master. And then he moved to Mathura. And he practiced severe austerities. He lived a very simple life. And he would just take shelter of chanting the holy name and crying out to the Supreme Lord and begging for forgiveness to his spiritual master, always calling out Rupa, Sanatana, and so on and so forth. One time, after 1 year, Sanatana Goswami came across Rupa Goswami, you know, in this state. Sanatana Goswami came across Jiva Goswami in Mathura. You know, he looked emaciated and, you know, he was unhappy and, you know, depressed. So then Sanatana Goswami came to Rupa Goswami, in Vrindavan. And he said to Rupa Goswami, it seems like you're not so familiar with the principles of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the fundamental principles of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the core principles of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What are those core principles? Vaishnava Seva, right? Namaruchi and Jiva Doya, right? So he said to Rupa Goswami, what are those principles? It seems like you're not familiar with them. You're not practicing them. Although you're a disciple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? You're a servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then Rupa Goswami started saying each of these principles. And then he came to say Jiva Doya. And then immediately he understood what Sanatana Goswami was saying. So he said, call for Jiva Goswami immediately. So then Jiva Goswami was called. And then Jiva Goswami was reunited with Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami in Vrindavan. Another time, Vallabha Bhattacharya, senior Vaishnava, came to see Rupa Goswami. And at that time, Rupa Goswami was compiling the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he's described that Rupa Goswami handed in the manuscripts of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he said to Vallabha Bhatta, you know, what do you think? And Vallabha Bhatta had a quick glance and he said he's not sure about, you know, this particular grammar or what he was saying there and so on and so forth. So then Rupa Goswami said, take these manuscripts, have a look through everything in thorough detail, and then all the things you're not sure about, you know, all the changes, just make a note of it and let me know. So then Vallabha Bhatta took this manuscript and he described that Jiva Goswami followed him. And as Vallabha Bhatta was at the Yamuna, after he finished his bathing and so on, Jiva Goswami approached him. And he said, because Jiva Goswami, very sensitive, you know, wanted to serve the spiritual master, wanted to serve the honor of the spiritual master, Rupa Goswami. So he said, what were the faults? What was it that you didn't feel right in Rupa Goswami's work? So then Vallabha Bhatta started describing certain grammatical errors and so on and so forth. So Jiva Goswami said there cannot be any faults in Rupa Goswami's work. And he defeated Vallabha Bhatta. He said, you know, what you're saying are these grammatical faults and these errors and so on. These are no faults. This is the philosophy. This is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And Rupa Goswami is perfect in what he is saying. So because being defeated in such a way with various evidences and various references from Vedic scriptures, Vallabha Bhatta accepted that actually, no, there is no errors. Although he was thinking there were some errors. So then Vallabha Bhatta came to Rupa Goswami, handed him the manuscripts of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and he said, actually, there are no errors. You know, there's no, I didn't do any changes because everything was perfect on second thoughts. You know, like that. So then Rupa Goswami was bewildered. He said, how is it that? Because initially you had a quick glance, and even with a quick glance, you were saying, you're not sure about this, you're not sure about this. So then Vallabha Bhatta explained that Jiva Goswami explained everything. He corrected me. So again, Rupa Goswami, instead of being pleased with his disciple Jiva Goswami, he became angry with him. He said, what are you doing? What are you doing? He said, he's your senior. Vallabha Bhatta is your senior. And not only that, he's my senior as well. And I gave him the opportunity to do some service. I wanted to hear from him. I wanted to see, you know, how I could improve. Right? You're just an offender. You know, you're an offender. And people like you shouldn't remain in Vrindavan. So this happened for the second time. So then Rupa Goswami then made his way, right, out of Vrindavan again. And he resided. Jiva Goswami, sorry, I keep mixing it up. Right? Mixing them up. So then Jiva Goswami then took residence of Nandaghat, a place known as Nandaghat. And sometimes it's described, in some places it's described that he was living in a thatched house. In another place it's described that he lived in a cave of a crocodile, like this. And this time he practiced even more severe austerities. Right? He would be eating almost next to nothing. The villagers would sometimes, you know, give him some flour or something like that. He would mix it with the Yamuna water and would just have that. And he would be always weeping and crying and calling out to Krishna and calling out to Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami. And he became very, very sick. He became very, very sick, just sustaining himself like this and feeling sorry for what he had done and that he had offended his spiritual master yet again like this. So then some people who are living next to Nandaghat, who are living in the region, they approached Sanatan Goswami. And they said, you know, we're concerned about this Swami, this young Swami. He seems to be sickly and he's not eating much and he's practicing severe austerities and he's always crying. He's calling out names of Sanatan, Rupa, you know, he's calling out Chaitanya, Nityananda, just always just chanting and crying. And he seems very sickly and seems completely emaciated. So then Sanatan Goswami came to see Jiva Goswami and he saw him in such a state. And immediately he took Jiva Goswami, right, back to Vrindavan, and he presented it in front of Rupa Goswami, and he said to Rupa Goswami, "What are you doing? Look at him, right? How could you do this?" So then Rupa Goswami understood that you know, he was just trying to serve him. Jiva Goswami was just trying to serve him, right? And he just wanted to, you know, hold the position of Rupa Goswami, right? That he didn't want anyone to, you know, kind of look down upon Rupa Goswami. So in this way, Rupa Goswami understood what Jiva Goswami was doing, and then he said that personally, Rupa Goswami took care of Jiva Goswami and nourished him back to health, like this. And in this way, then Jiva Goswami continued serving Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and he did amazing service after that, following the instructions of Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. He compiled over 17 titles of books, 400,000 verses. He is regarded as a scholar even amongst materialists and even amongst the various scholars in various universities and establishments and institutions, even till this day. Prabhupada said, amongst scholars, Vaishnavas are the best scholars. And amongst the Vaishnavas, Rupa Goswami is the utmost, Jiva Goswami is the utmost of scholar, like this. So in this way, Rupa Goswami, through a life of service to the spiritual master, specifically Jiva Goswami, service to the spiritual master, sacrificing, attending to his needs, being very sensitive in all ways, right, to protect the position of his spiritual master, attain perfection, attain the mercy of the Lord, attain the mercy of the spiritual master, like this. So serving the spiritual master seems like the key in terms of getting mercy. And by this mercy, then one is able to really do something, take steps to surrender and become a surrendered soul. So I suppose I can stop here and maybe one or two comments if there is.
The devotees here, sorry. They become Krishna's yes man, and it seems to me we see them here. Couple of examples, you know, is young Sam and Gopinath. They're yes men. Mm-hmm. They say yes to everything, whatever comes their way. So this is, to me, they never say no to Krishna or Krishna's devotees. And that's their thing. They're constantly saying yes to whatever comes their way in terms of service to each other and everyone else. And, you know, we can see, and if we can appreciate that amongst each other, we just see examples of Krishna's yes men.
Mm.
They say yes to everything.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whatever is going to them and given to them, they see an opportunity. And certainly and Sutapa, of course. You know, God bless him. Mm. He's a yes man. But he's doing it in such an amazing way. So that's just an observation, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Yes. So when we're also around devotees, right, who are surrendering, right, and yes men, right, like that, we can also get some inspiration from them, and in this way also help ourselves in terms of surrendering, like that. Thank you very much. We can stop here. Shri Vamandev ki, Shila Jiva Goswami ki, Shila Prabhupada ki, Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol.